Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot. Our special look at housing affordability continues with Terry Lee Kelford, who is, of course, the board chair of Cornerstone Landing. Terry Lee, welcome back to Lake 88.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. We've talked with you many times about your organization, and we'll talk a little bit about what you do. But we're really, you know, sort of tapping into your brain here to talk about, to get your opinion, to get your views on what is happening as far as affordable housing and accommodations being met or not met as an organization that is looking to get assistance and also to give us an idea of how we fare against other places in the country. So we're going to start off, of course, talking about young people. When we talk about affordable housing, I know having kids who are in their 20s, finding a place can be so incredibly difficult. And this is what you're dealing with. People don't understand that Cornerstone Landing goes from teenagers up to young adults.
Mm-hmm. It does. Yeah. Up to 24, sometimes a little older. If we've worked with someone before that, we don't just cut them off at their 24th birthday and say you're on your own. So we try to support them as best we can and see them through that, that age period for sure. But yeah, we support young families. We have young people in their early 20s with children that we support. So
what are you hearing now?
Oh, where to begin? All right. Yeah. Well, let's jump right in.
This is where I ask you a question and then you get to speak for the next 10 minutes.
Yep. So
that's basically it.
Well, so we've been around, you know, the history. I've shared it many times on this station, but I have about a 25-year history of working around affordable housing for youth in Lanark County. And so not a lot has changed in the sense that we're still ringing the alarm to say homelessness is a problem. Sadly, you know, I would say that homelessness has increased dramatically in the last few years due to issues like increasing house prices and low social assistance rates. And so what we're hearing from young people right now is that, you know, they're experiencing rent evictions. I've heard lots of your guests talk about rent evictions and the impact of that. I heard that from Kate yesterday, who's doing a great survey in the province of Ontario around rent evictions from the Ottawa Alliance to End Homelessness. And so that's happening in our small towns as well, right? So right across this country, there's some universal issues we're dealing with when it comes to housing affordability, low social assistance rates, rent evictions. Those are pretty consistent themes we're hearing right across the country and certainly true to Lanark County as well. So we bought our first house last year because we couldn't afford to fundraise enough money to help pay rent supplements for young people to stay in private market housing. And so it's definitely become a significant issue for folks.
I realized that, I remember you telling us that you bought this house and I remember that we covered it as well. I didn't realize that, you know, essentially is what you're saying. It was cheaper to buy a house than to continue doing things the way you were, even with the house prices, what they are.
Even with the house prices, yeah, we tried to get two houses before we got to the one that we got. We still got it at a pretty reasonable price. We could, you know, if we were into real estate investments, we'd flip it right now. But we want the affordable housing. And as a nonprofit, that's our mandate. So, and that's certainly one of the themes that I wish I was hearing more about in a provincial and federal space as well when it comes to policies is supporting nonprofits more to invest in affordable housing in bricks and mortars, because I think that's going to be one of the ways out of this crisis that we find ourselves in. But yeah. Yeah, from a small organization perspective, it just made sense for us to purchase our own property where we could control the rents and the expenses and the costs because we couldn't keep up. We went from $12,000 to $20,000 to $30,000 to $40,000 a year for rent supplements, primarily on fundraised dollars. So it was really expensive for us to keep up those rates. And a lot of the grants that we were able to access, we've had huge support from the county, Lanark County. We've accessed some federal funds for rent supplements as well. But the problem with a lot of those programs is that they're one-year funding or two-year funding at the most. And so you can't put $40,000 worth of rent supplements out to folks and then say, hey, it's March 31st, it's end of the year, you're all done. We have to pull all those rent supplements back. So we, as an agency, always try to fundraise to make sure we've got some reserves in place to be able to help us get through those ups and downs when it comes to the funding. But it was certainly a significant factor for us in deciding to buy a house.
It's interesting because we talk about the project that is going to take place in Smiths Falls with the town, the county, and CareBridge. That one being about $8.8 million to build that, which is going to be 100% geared to income, which is amazing. And of course, we need to see more projects like that spring up. But you raise a really good point where if you're looking at units there, I do believe it was about $300,000 per unit is what the breakdown is. A house, if you're paying, say, $450,000, it can be converted to two units or something like that. That could be another option. Instead of building a full apartment building, you can have not-for-profit groups purchase homes such as you did and then convert them. That seems to be a viable option. But then we get back to the problem that the houses are so expensive and they're hard to find sometimes.
Yeah, it was one of the reasons why we started a few years ago pushing the issue of secondary units as well, though, right? So we wanted municipalities to ensure that secondary units were an option, because you could then include a unit inside a single family home. You could include a second detached unit, so you could have three units per property, which made it, again, still much more affordable, quite frankly, than high rises sometimes. So And it depends on the level of supports, right? We're talking about bricks and mortars capital costs, but we're not actually talking about costs of supports as well.
Just on that, because one thing that's, it sounds like it could be sort of a cramped situation, but in many situations, you're looking at families that are staying together on one lot of land. We talked about this with Mayor John Fenwick and Warden of Lanark County as well. The same type of deal. You put maybe a tiny home on a larger property, and then you add a granny suite, and then you've got family who still have their own private areas, and you're not necessarily going to get sick of these people, and you know your neighbors.
Yes. Yeah. I believe Perth did a study when they were first looking at secondary unit bylaws and found that there was something like 263 single family homes that could qualify for a secondary unit. So because of setbacks and all the other requirements that that surround that bylaw. But there's a lot of seniors who want to age in place, but they don't want to have a roommate per se.
Yeah,
so secondary units are a really nice option for folks to be able to have someone additional on their property, have some income, but also have their privacy, which I think is the key to those secondary units.
And the other thing it does too is if you have these families sort of come together, is it potentially opens other units in the city or in the town. The municipality that is doing this for Perth, for example, you could have the matriarch of a family who is now alone, wants to downsize and could move into a granny suite, leaving behind either an apartment or a home that they've had for many years. It, like, the options then, you know, increase.
I've had so many phone calls. I still get 2 to 3 to 4 phone calls a week about tiny homes. I was just speaking to someone last night through social media about who's looking for land to place their tiny home. And, you know, several phone calls from Lanark County, even after being on the show with you, Bob, we would have phone calls as follow-up. You know, gentleman looking to put a secondary unit tiny house on his property so that he could get his friend who is a military veteran out of a shelter in Ottawa. Mother who had an older son who had mental health issues, and they couldn't share a house together, but she would have had a secondary unit tiny home if she had had that option at the time. You know, a senior parent who wants to help out with daycare at, you know, their child's house with their grandchildren, but they don't want to live in the house. They want to be in a granny suite. They want their own separate unit, their own separate space. So many reasons why people from all demographics want this type of housing. And I think that's key when we're talking about election platforms as well, is that to solve this housing crisis, we need choice. We need as many choices as possible. And through something I talk all the time about with tiny homes, because there is some pushback still on tiny homes, even though the conversation has changed dramatically since I came on your show 4 or 5 years ago and started talking about tiny homes. But, you know, choice is going to be key. And through planning legislation, we've ruled out tiny house options by applying single family home minimum requirements, square footage requirements for single family homes, preventing secondary units. And secondary units were quite common on farm properties around this county, by the way. My parents actually lived in a secondary tiny house on their parents' farm property for 4 years when I was born. And so over time, that was made illegal. You weren't allowed to do that any longer. So we got to go back to some of these options that we've had that we've ruled out through planning legislation. I think, again, you know, I'm starting to hear that in election platforms right now, too, is to try to get rid of redundant bylaws and to make it easier for people to build. And I think that's a really important piece of any platform right now, is that we need to find ways to make it easier and faster to build.
Yeah. And you always hear about people wanting to get rid of old bylaws that, you know, just don't make sense. And of course, there's always stories about that. You know, you can't eat ice cream on Sunday on Main Street and dumb things like that. But when you look at things like tiny homes, here is one where you're not just saying get rid of the laws, you're saying change the building code. This is another type of a viable housing option. And it's not necessarily a box that you're throwing people into. These are actual homes. You're looking at plumbing, you're looking at having a kitchen, you're looking at having pride, you're looking at having independence. All of these things come with these homes. So I don't understand the hesitation on it. Of course, we've been asking the questions about that. all week, and we intend to ask some more of those of Minister Clark tomorrow as well. But it really just seems like this is one, not the solution, but this is one part of the solution that is right in front of us. And I just don't understand why people aren't acting.
Yeah, I think, I think municipalities, if I had one phrase for them, I would say, get out of the way. Make it easier to build housing. Don't create redundant bylaws. I called around to some of our local townships just to see where they were at with secondary unit legislation, because it's been a few years now in terms of when the Provincial Planning Act changed to encourage secondary units on properties. And most have actually changed, which is really great. Tay Valley led the way. They're kind of my planning heroes. Perth has been doing some brilliant work as well. They've passed a grant to encourage secondary units for affordable housing. But then we also have townships, I won't name the township, that have recently passed a bylaw to say that secondary units are only permitted on properties that have a minimum of 20 acres. There is absolutely no reason for that bylaw. That is just a made-up bylaw, in my opinion, that it's legislated NIMBYism. It's a way of saying we don't really want secondary units in our community. So, I think, that's the danger that lies in the flexibility of the Planning Act and the way the municipalities have control over those planning decisions. So, it's legislated NIMBYism in many ways, actually. So we need to look at things like that. We need to have those discussions. How do we make it easier for people? How do we make more consistency amongst the municipalities to make housing more accessible quickly for folks?
As we do approach the provincial election, it certainly appears that housing is going to be one of the central issues, because it is affecting people in communities large and small, clear across Ontario. Do you expect that we could hear from a party saying that the province, the provincial government, has to be the one who regulates and who says these type of properties should be allowed, make it happen?
Yes. And I think there's a few issues that circle that that piece for sure. I think, the building code, you can get frustrated with it if you like, but it's clear. And there's not a lot of flexibility. There's some room for interpretation, but there's not a lot of flexibility in the building code, and people can criticize that. But the Planning Act is very different. The provincial Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing in the province releases a Provincial Planning Act and Provincial Planning report, and they make suggestions to municipalities, but it sometimes takes municipalities 5, 6, 7 years to update their bylaws. So by the time the Planning Act has, it's redundant by the time they actually sit down to review their official plans and create the bylaws that go along with it. So we need to improve that. It should not be taking 7 years. It also shouldn't require the millions of dollars that goes out to planning fees to develop the same bylaws that would apply to any number of municipalities. Every single municipality develops their own bylaws for every issue. So I lead in a Thousand Islands is the only one I've seen now that's created a bylaw for tiny homes on trailers. But that, as an example, I called the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing a couple of weeks ago, and they don't keep a repository of zoning bylaws. So it's up to every individual municipality and planner to develop their own bylaws specific to these. That could include things like setbacks and parking requirements and all those pieces. There should be a way to make that much more streamlined. You should not have to wait anywhere from 6 months to 7 years to get bylaws updated. And it shouldn't be up to individual homeowners like myself. I've had to do this twice now. We're doing this with our tiny home in Perth, and I had to do it with residential treatment centers 25 years ago, where you're being the first to kind of push a bylaw. And then you're at risk as a homeowner of having to pay for municipal fees to draft a bylaw that's not in place already that will then be used by everybody else in the community afterwards. That shouldn't be the case. It should just be streamlined. If the province has a position on planning, it should be adopted by municipalities. And that's not the case right now. And it's very frustrating because there's so much inconsistency even amongst the different townships and towns in Lanark County, as an example. Yeah,
absolutely. And we've seen this over the years with so many different departments and so many different subjects, where now that things are becoming more streamlined, even like if you look back to like 1999, like when you had all the amalgamations in Ontario and so on, You didn't necessarily see this information and everything that can be accomplished now, thanks to the internet, where things can be streamlined. Like back 150 years ago, communities had to have these own bylaws and so on and so forth, because they couldn't just go click onto Ontario.ca and find out, what the standard should be and then, make it work for your community. Everybody had to create these own things, their own things. They would consult with neighboring communities and that, but that would be about as far as it would go. You couldn't have the possibility to streamline things now. And it just boggles my mind that they have got this technology in front of them they have got the ability to look at best practices clear across the province and see what can work in certain types of communities. And if not adopting, then adapting some of those to individual situations. It just amazes me that we haven't got there yet. It's 2022 and this technology has been sitting around for more than two decades.
Yeah, it's a lot of wasted time, energy, and money that we don't have right now, right? I mean, I think if there's any issue with housing, we need money. Everybody's saying it. I've listened to some of the other interviews from some of the mayors locally, and I think the consistent message, Kate Burkholder Harris yesterday as well, I mean, we need more money to address the housing crisis in this country, both municipally, provincially, and federally. And so we can't afford to be wasting it on redundancy and duplication of service, for sure.
What I'm getting is more money and rules that make sense, you know, from the conversations that I've had thus far this week about this. And that seems to be the two biggest parts. And if you had more money and then regulations that were easy to follow and made sense, then great strides could be made. We've talked about things sort of, I'm so glad you brought up tiny homes, because it is such an opportunity to help so many different people. We're talking about seniors, we're talking about young people, we're talking about people who want to rent homes, people who want to get into home ownership for the first time. Those are great entry level properties. So I'm really glad that you did that. Also, people who may have special needs, some of these units are fantastic because they're all on one level, very easy to navigate. Anyway, they're great, and I'm so glad that you brought that up. But what I would like you to do in the time that we have left here, Terry Lee, is to talk specifically about youth and your organization and others like it, and what it takes for an organization for yours to be as successful as you have been over the years while dealing with municipalities in the county.
Yeah, I'm going to quote Dr. Stephen Gates. He's an internationally renowned researcher on youth homelessness, and he's with York University, the Homeless Hub. And he came to Perth and spoke a few years ago for us. And one of the things he said, I'll always remember, and I quote him often, is that if you want to solve homelessness, end youth homelessness. Because the research shows that the earlier folks get into homelessness and the longer they stay homeless, the harder it is to actually get them stably housed. And so focus on youth, solve it there. It's the best prevention model we've got for homelessness. It's always resonated with me, for sure. And again, I've been focused on youth homelessness for 25 years in Leonard County. So I think youth are important from that perspective. And I think we have a tendency in our smaller communities to focus on seniors. We have some lovely, beautiful small towns out here where folks want to retire. I think Perth, my hometown, is quite well known for that. but we want our communities to be inclusive. We want them to include young people. We don't want all of our young people to move away. They're our future employers and families and elected officials. So we want to keep them here in this space. But if they don't have housing, they leave. And if there's no place for them to come back because there's also a housing crisis, then it's also a problem. So I think I heard some of your guest speakers talk about lack of folks to fill jobs in our small towns, which is a significant issue for sure. So I think, youth is a really important piece of that. And we want people to get through high school, graduate, get jobs. And you can't do that if you're not housed. It's just, it's impossible to go to job interview if you haven't had access to a shower or to brush your teeth for the last 2 weeks, or do your laundry. So that was always our goal, is just to get kids housed and get them housed as fast as possible. We adopted a housing first model, which is the internationally recognized best practice for addressing homelessness, which means getting people into housing as fast as possible and wrapping them in supports. It is one of my concerns about current discussions around affordable housing, is that we're talking about affordable housing and homelessness, but we're not talking enough about the funding that's required for supports help those people who have deep affordability requirements, who are relying on social assistance rates. Speaking of that, I don't hear enough talk about increasing social assistance rates. Social assistance rates have not increased to reflect inflation or the reality of the housing situation in Canada either. So we have folks getting $720 a month for all of their housing, food, hygiene, cleaning supplies, and everything else they require. And it's just impossible to find that. We have young couples right now, two people renting rooms for $800. They're each paying $400 to rent a single room in a house. So $720 a month for a single person is not adequate at all. And we need to be talking about that more. So basic minimum incomes, increases to social assistance, those are really important pieces that we're not talking enough about. And I would also pitch not just for youth, but also for adults and seniors as well, that there's not enough focus on rural homelessness. And it's one of the reasons why I was one of the founders of a national alliance called the National Alliance to End Rural and Remote Homelessness as well, is that a lot of the federal funding, and I would say provincial as well, there's examples of provincial policy as well, that don't focus or favor rural communities. They favor urban centers. And there's a perception that there's not homelessness in rural communities. And I can tell you that there is. There's people sleeping outside all across Lanark County right now. And so we really need to be advocating. We need our elected officials to be advocating as much as possible for increased supports for rural, remote, and northern communities in Canada, because we just don't get equitable funding. And you also see in policy, for example, I heard some of your mayors talking about inclusionary zoning, and the way that the inclusionary zoning bylaw was drafted was that it had to be near public transit. Well, if you're in a small community and you have no public transit, then you can't use that as a mechanism to be able to increase your affordable housing stock. So I think those pieces are really important, not just from a money perspective, but also from a policy perspective as well, that we have to have people advocating all the time for increased supports for rural communities, because we have a flow of young people from our communities into urban centers. And then we have a flow of gentrification happening in the opposite direction. So people from cities with lots of money coming out and driving up our prices as well. So, so it's all connected. It's all connected, whether it's youth, adults, seniors, it's all connected.
Absolutely. And what's it like dealing with the communities, because they're all talking about wanting to make efforts to end homelessness, to work on affordable housing. And I know that yours is not the only organization who visits them and talks about this particular issue, but what is it like when you do approach them and obviously they're very supportive and they love the ideas and they love that what you're doing, but when it actually comes time to get a deal or something in place, what's that been like in your experience?
Youth tend to be last on the list. So our housing caseworkers are constantly taking young people to appointments for apartments. And we have some brilliant landowners who have supported us for years and property managers who've been very supportive. And they'll call us up and say, we have another unit coming up. Do you have any young people who need it? But the majority of landlords and some property managers will hang up in their ear as soon as you say young person on assistance, because they have so much option right now. There's sometimes 15, 20, 30 people seeing a unit. And so there's a lot more choice. And when it comes to choice, young people don't usually fare well. They're usually the ones that get left to the end. So we've had, it takes us a lot longer now to find housing as well. So not only is it more expensive, but it takes a lot more showings to get a young person into housing. So, and rent evictions, I've heard that talked about a lot as well. Rent evictions are a huge factor. We've had young people offered $2,000 and $3,000 to vacate a unit so that they can be renovated and flipped and put back on the market for twice the price. And that's another policy piece I'm not hearing enough about. And I know it's a really contentious issue, but we need increased rent control desperately. So in Ontario, there's no rent control at all on units that were occupied after 2018. So new builds have no rent control requirements. And if we applied a policy where rent control also applied to the changeover in units. So right now, if a landlord evicts somebody or somebody vacates a unit, the landlord can increase the rents whatever they want. And one of the best ways to maintain lower housing costs or rental costs would be to apply rental controls on those changed units as well. Apply the same legislation so that when somebody does vacate and somebody new moves in, it's maintained as affordable. I think Kate mentioned yesterday, we're losing 15 units of affordable housing for every one we're building right now. So if we don't stop the flow of folks or loss of affordable housing units, we're never going to get ahead of this game, no matter how many units we build. And so it's a losing battle right now. We got to have some really tough conversations and apply some really tough legislation that people aren't going to like.
Yeah, absolutely. I think rent control is key. I mean, we see it in, for crying out loud, we see it in sitcoms in the States. Anytime you talk about affordable apartments in New York City, like just look at the show Friends, and I'm not basing anything serious on the show Friends, but you know, they talk about living in those apartments there because they were rent controlled. And that was the way that they were able to do it on Seinfeld. And it's a big thing in New York City. I've had a friend who moved down there for work as well and lucked into a rent controlled apartment, changed her life, you know, changed the way that she was able to live. So certainly an option there. Terry Lee, we're just about out of time. Just wanted to give you some opportunity to, of course, mention how people can get a hold of you and also your organization, if you wanted to just give Cornerstone a quick plug here.
Yeah, for sure. You can support us. You can find us on social media. We have a Facebook page and group. You can follow myself. I also post everything about Cornerstone as well. And we also have a website, www.cornerstonelanding.com. And we have a Twitter feed and we have an Instagram page. Facebook's probably the best way. And you can send us messages that way too. You can also make donations through our website through our Canada Helps button. So if you go to our website, you'll find a place to make donations direct to us there. So, and we also are always taking supplies, donations of supplies as well. So it's another way to get involved. So, and to plug, we have a golf tournament coming up on June 24th at the Perth Golf Course. And we also are the recipients of the Perth Polar Bear Plunge this year. So we're really excited about that too.
Absolutely. Looking forward to seeing you jump in right ahead of the Lake 88 team that'll be jumping in too. So right. There you go. And also, I just wanted to, I like putting you on the spot. So election night, we do our show, of course. And before the results come in, I'm going to invite you to join Brian Perkin and I to talk about this issue and what you heard from the candidates as we wait for those results to come in. Would you do that for us?
Brilliant. Would love to.
Absolutely. Great to hear that. Thank you so much, Terry Lee. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and we'll be speaking with you again soon.
Thanks, Bob.
Our guest today on In Focus as Affordable Housing Week continues, Cornerstone Landing's Terry Lee Kelford. Now, tomorrow, we're going to wrap this week up with Leeds, Granville, Thousand Islands, and Rideau Lakes MPP Steve Clark, who just also happens to be the Provincial Minister of Municipal Affairs and Housing. You don't want to miss that one. I'm Bob Perreault. Thanks so much for listening, and have a wonderful afternoon.